Adamson is a genealogist and historian. He's traveled throughout the country gathering photographs and materials for his books. In 1991 through 92, Adamson began researching the JFK assassination. He became certain that Oswald was indeed the lone assassin. This belief was shattered, though, by the discovery of George D. Mournshield, and Adamson is now convinced that the conspiracy will soon be solved. The entire foundation of the 13 volumes, the JFK assassination timeline chart, and Oswald's closest friend, the George D. Mournshield story, is a result of 10 detailed years and a thorough research of D. Mournshield's personal address and phone book. Our guest this hour on Coast to Coast, Bruce Adamson. Hi, Bruce. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
Good. Lots of work you put into this one, my friend.
Well, I won a case against the federal government, pro per, in 1993. And I was given 2 years back pay, and instead of blowing the money, right when Oliver Stone's movie came out. And at first I didn't like the movie, and then after watching it two or three times, I thought it was he did a really good job. But then I came across the Mournshield, who dated Jackie Kennedy's mother in 1938. And then I started making all these other connections. I read that he committed suicide in Palm Beach, and for 6 months before that, he said that Oswald was set up for the assassination. Well, I contacted the West Palm Beach Sheriff's Office, and they gave me a photocopy of D. Mournshield's personal phone book.
Uh-huh.
And they didn't have the time to go through and research as a genealogist. I've been a genealogist since 1982.
So you got the training.
The training, yeah. They're used to looking at people that have criminal records. I'm good at digging up dirt on people that are rich and famous that donate their papers to libraries.
Uh-huh.
I've been doing my own family, and this is much more controversial. So, but the federal government, I won a case as a whistleblower, so I've been getting a steady income, which has allowed me.
Well, can you, not to digress for a bit here, Bruce, but can you tell us what you jumped all over here with the government?
Yeah, and I did write a book on my fourth great-grandfather, Rufus Easton, who they just honored very nicely in St. Louis as first postmaster of St. Louis.
Sure, that's my hometown, by the way.
And, well, Rufus, I wrote a whole book on him. That's my favorite book, 300 pages. And Rufus had his first, built the first post office right down by the arch where that church is in the parking lot.
Oh, yeah.
I Third and L.
Know that well. So, but you blew the whistle on something.
Yeah, it was in a harassment. I kept getting retaliated against.
You were?
With the state government.
Well, don't say off the record when you're on this show, because
okay,
you're being broadcast to millions of people right now.
Well, I didn't win my... I went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. I didn't win that case, but I won my workers' comp.
Okay, but so you at least have experience in investigating through your genealogy background and your background as a historian.
Right.
What was it, though, that kind of perked you up when you started investigating D. Mournshield? I mean, because most people, it would have just gone right over their head.
Well, I went through the 26 volumes of the Warren Commission report. And
okay.
I came across George and Jean-Lagan D. Mournshield.
Did his name keep coming up?
Well, no, there was 240 pages of testimony.
All right.
And then one thing led to it, one discovery left, came over another and another. It was like discovering gold. And I said, geez, this is a good nugget. And then I contacted Leon Panetta in 1992, and he supported my research until he became chief of staff of Bill Clinton.
All right. Well, tell us then, who is this person? Who was this person? Because, as you said, he committed suicide.
Well, George D. Mournshield was Lee Harvey Oswald. He's actually a CIA agent, oil geologist. And he became Lee Harvey Oswald's best friend prior to the assassination. And Oswald looked up to him.
All right. Now, wait a minute. You had said earlier that he dated Jacqueline Onassis, his mother?
Right. Lee Bouvier.
Okay. And he ends up being Lee Harvey Oswald's best friend?
That's right. That's what got me going. When you said that's what, I had like a nightmare. And then I found out that Jackie purchased the pink Chanel suit from D. Mournshield's aunt by marriage in New York City.
The suit she wore on the day of the assassination?
Yeah, at the clothing store Chez Neon, which was owned by Nona McAdoo. Nona McAdoo was the aunt by marriage to George D. Mournshield. And Jackie purchased this Chanel suit. And then I found out that D. Mournshield was friends with Jackie's dress designer, Oleg, and his brother, Igor Cassini.
So this guy was everywhere.
He is. He knows all the top oilmen, Texas oilmen, H.L. Hunt, Clint Murchison, Herman and George Brown, Lyndon Johnson's best friends. He's writing, it just goes on and on.
And this guy was in the CIA at the time?
Yeah, I found out, I won a case when Bill Clinton was in there. They gave me a Freedom of Information Act that I served in 1994 on DeMarzo's father-in-law, who was in charge of 250 CIA agents from 1950 to 53.
All right, now, what makes you believe that DeMarnshield was somehow tied into the assassination in some form or fashion?
Well, he said that Oswald was not guilty of the assassination, and before he put a shotgun in his mouth and pulled the trigger in West Palm Beach, Florida.
Did he ever have a suicide note or anything like that?
No, he was giving interviews to authors or newspaper writers, and like a guy named William Oltmans, who just passed away.
Now, how do we know DeMarnshield committed suicide and he wasn't killed?
Well, I have the actual audio tape in, on my video, which I produced, which was shown today in Manhattan.
Audio tape of what?
Of DeMarnshield's suicide.
You mean he, the tape recorder?
No, his one of his first wife's second wife's sister, who he was staying in their home, set the tape recorder to record the soap operas. Yet they leave a shotgun and bullets out for him, and he made his.
So you could hear in the background the shotgun.
Gunshot, and I have it on the actual video, and then you hear his daughter discovering it 20 minutes later.
Oh my God.
And you hear her screaming. That was the chilling thing. Alexandria DeMarnshield had an affair in 64.
Is there any way, Bruce, that when we go to the break in about 10 minutes, that you can get a portion of that ready and maybe hold a phone by your by the tape so we can
I played it on Dr. Stan, and sometime in the future I could have it all queued up.
You can't get it ready in about 10 minutes?
No, I'm here with candlelight, and I'm just kind of focused in on, you know, what we're doing.
Candlelight.
Yeah. Well, shoot, pun intended.
Well, now, let's go back a little bit, I want to piece this together, because you put together a timeline here on this assassination. So DeMarnshield is in the CIA. He gets to know Oswald. He's dating Jackie Kennedy's mother.
That's in 1938.
Prior to.
Yeah.
But he's got this relationship with all these people.
Right.
What do you think his role was in the assassination?
Well, I think he set Oswald up to take the blame. And whatever he told Oswald to do,
Oswald would do,
yeah. And I believe that Oswald was CIA. I believe that Dr. Philip Mullinson, his book Spy Saga, is definitive on that. And it's a short book, and I believe that Oswald, what helps clear Oswald, in my opinion, and this gentleman was calling earlier with Mr. Fetzer.
Yes.
And is that Oswald doesn't have any gunpowder nitrates on his face. He does have gunpowder on his hands. So if he was really trying to kill Kennedy, he would have been looking down the scope of the rifle, and Mr. Fetzer would have been the one to answer it. He would have been able to answer this. How could somebody shoot a rifle and have gunpowder on their hands and not on their face?
On their face. You'd have it all over your chin and everything.
Right, right. And he didn't have time to wash his hands and so forth. And so that, I think, is important. And Oswald saying that he was set up for a patsy.
Now, you also, in your timeline, you also mentioned, though, in your research, that DeMarnshield also knew or somehow was tied into Abraham Zapruder, the person who took the film. What was that relationship?
Well, DeMarnshield's wife, his fourth wife, Jean Lagan, worked with Abe Zapruder at a clothing store in Dallas.
Now, what are the odds of all this happening, Bruce?
Well, and what are the odds of you taking a picture of somebody being assassinated and not reacting for your own safety?
That's a good point.
And they both belonged.
It's not like he was a professional photographer, and that was his job. You know?
And that was a good point that Mr. Fetzer made, that he had vertigo.
Yeah.
When you're hearing, he says he hears the bullets whistling by his head, but what? You're not going to drop the camera and react like everybody else is in the line of your camera?
Yeah.
Well, both DeMarnshield and Jean Lagan DeMarnshield worked at this clothing company. They're both white Russians. They worked with the mother of Lyndon Johnson's personal secretary, Olga Femer. And Marie Femer, still alive today in Washington, became one of the first woman senior officers at the CIA.
This thing's like a soap opera.
Oh, it's great once you get it down.
I mean, let me tell you something. The fact that you are such an expert in facts and genealogy tells me a lot, because you're a facts and numbers guy. I mean,
yeah, I'm not theory. I'm just go with the facts, and I have cousins that are friends of George and Barbara Bush that sponsored one of my books, The Life and Times of George W. Ely.
Mm-hmm.
But yet I found the most incriminating evidence against George Bush Sr.
Oh, really?
And I don't discriminate. I didn't go after Lyndon Johnson because he's a Democrat. I didn't go after George Bush Sr. because he's a Republican. I just go where the evidence leads me to.
Well, wasn't Sr. in the CIA at the time?
Well, I can prove he's in the CIA in 1953, and as a pot of oil platforms were parked right above Castro's Cuba when he took over January 1st, 1959?
Mm-hmm.
And so the Zapata Oil Company was a front, and that was the code name for the Bay of Pigs invasion. Well, I was able to circumstantially prove that George Bush Sr. wrote me a letter, which I believe you have, admitting that he knew George DeMarchal since 1942. That's George Herbert Walker Bush.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Then I was able to circumstantially prove that Bush was in charge of the Bay of Pigs invasion, which was codename Operation Zapata, and that was George Bush's oil company, Zapata Oil. And two of the boats were called the Barbara J. and the Houston.
That's true. You are right about that.
And then I was able. Then you have J. Edgar Hoover briefing George Bush of the CIA the day after the assassination. Then you have this mysterious call by George Bush to the Houston FBI office, where he says that he knows this guy James Parrott, who was talking about somebody killing the president.
So you tell me, Bruce, then, with all these facts that you've uncovered and kind of weaved through pretty eloquently, by the way.
Thank you.
What do you think the motive was to kill?
Well, I think there are a number of motives, and that's why it's kind of confusing for the average person.
Sure, absolutely.
I believe the firing of Alan Dulles, the CIA director. I have Alan Dulles going to Houston meeting the head CIA agent in Houston.
So which would you think Dulles gets upset because he gets fired?
And his friends.
And his friends. They're all out now. Boom. And I guess they got fired not because they were doing a poor job leading the CIA. I have a feeling Kennedy...
The Bay of Pigs invasion,
right.
which was Bush's operation with Edwin Pauley. And Edwin Pauley, keep in mind, is listed four times in DeMarchal's phone book and is the chairman of the Democratic Party of California.
Okay. So they get fired. They get upset. You think that's what gets the ball rolling here?
I do, and I believe Texas oilmen were upset because the Kennedys wanted to remove or reduce the oil depletion allowance, which allowed the wealthy Texas oilmen to take 27.5% of their income taxes and reinvest it into other companies.
Uh-huh.
And then there's a couple other motives that anybody having prior knowledge could have made a fortune off the New York Stock Exchange. Well, the Bush family has their other side that nobody ever looks at, are the Walkers. Walkers are one of the biggest security firms, oldest security firms on Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody having prior knowledge could sell their companies, you know, a week, a month, 6 months before, and then buy it back for like one-tenth the cost. Because the day Kennedy was shot, there was $21 billion lost in the New York Stock Exchange.
Oh, it just plummeted, didn't it?
Yes. So that would be a motive. And then
about wanting to come back and retake Cuba, Vietnam, was it all part of it?
Well, no, there is a Vietnam connection, and that is through Ruth Forbes Payne, who is the mother of Michael and Ruth Hyde Payne of Irving, Texas.
My gosh, Steven, you know these names.
Yeah, Ruth Forbes Payne's the first cousin to John Forbes Carey. And this is interesting. I just found this out 3 days before the election.
The whole thing's a conspiracy.
It is. And
how many people do you think were involved in this thing?
Well, Ruth Forbes Payne's best friend was a CIA agent, Mary Bancroft. She wrote a book called Autobiography of a Spy, and she worked with Alan Dulles on the assassination attempt on Adolf Hitler.
And okay, but you know, with all these names, though, that you've given us...
Yeah, it's hard to keep them...
In all the, you can't say for sure that every one of them was involved in the assassination, can you?
I have a letter from Marina Oswald to Ruth Hyde Payne saying, is your mother-in-law, who is Ruth Forbes Payne, and her friends going to help us? And this is in June of 63. At the same time, DeMarchal is tied to the Paynes, and so is his brother, Dimitri.
William, what do you think she meant by help us? Financially?
Yeah.
Because of what?
Right. But, well... Ruth Ford Payne's friends, Mary Bancroft, is Henry Luce, who purchased the Zapruder film. Alan Dulles, who is CIA director, is the lover. Her best friend, Mary Bancroft, is the lover of Alan Dulles, who is the first Warren commissioner and CIA director that Kennedy fired, and also the lover of Henry Luce, who owns Time Life, Fortune magazine.
My, oh my, oh my.
And then her husband is Arthur Young, the inventor of the Bell helicopter, and they made millions off the war. Arthur Young and Ruth Ford Payne made millions off the war in Vietnam and the Korean Wars. And yet they founded this Institute of Consciousness at Berkeley, like they're real peaceful people. Yet they're making millions, you know, like Colonel Fletcher Prouty pointed out, that there were like 5,000 helicopters lost, and they're just they're getting royalties up the yin-yang.
How many people do you think were involved in this conspiracy, numbers-wise?
Well, there are a lot of associations, and a lot of people just do what they're told.
Do you think some people didn't even know what was going to happen?
A lot of people are shocked and emotionally tied to it, and they can't really sit back and make a rational judgment.
But you know, if you have to look at a puzzle as it's complete from the top, or you're not going to have any idea what it is. And I wonder how many people were little pieces of a puzzle, and they just didn't know what the whole picture was.
Yeah, there are some of those.
Stay with us. Bruce Adamson, our guest. He's a genealogist. My gosh, he put some stuff into this. And we'll take your phone calls when we come right back.
Would you pay 15 cents to hear this show in its entirety? That's the daily charge for StreamLink. Sign up at www.coasttocoastam.com.
With our guest Bruce Adamson. And remember, with all these names, there are no coincidences. Yeah. Bruce, I have to ask you this before we go to phone calls. You won a case in 2003 against the CIA, in which it was stated that Mohammed Al-Fayed, who was the father of Dodi Fayed, who died in the car crash with Princess Diana, was in business with De Mornshield
in 1964.
And they were representing at the time a fellow by the name of El Amir Atta?
Atta, which happens to be the same name as the father of the lead hijacker of September 11th.
Could it have been one and the same?
I've been on Dr. Stan's show asking this question. You know, I've approached people at the Pentagon, give it to law enforcement agencies. Fayed lost the lawsuit against the Pentagon and the CIA 2 months before the crash. And then his brother-in-law is Anand Khashoggi, who is the personal advisor to the Saudi royal family.
Sure, and he was a gunrunner, too, wasn't he?
He was in charge of Iran-Contra.
Yeah.
The missile deal, and he worked very closely with Bush. And at the time of the crash in 2001, Bush Sr.
His ship at the time, the Nabiya.
He had the largest ship in the world.
Was used in a James Bond movie, by the way.
I know he had one of the largest.
His daughter, I think, something like that.
But Khashoggi lost a nephew. Dodi Al-Fayed was his nephew. That's blood.
I didn't know that.
And he was in business at Barrick Gold with George Bush Sr., with people, a lot of other important directors in 2001. And he sold his condominium that he paid $36 million for in the 70s for half the price.
Where was it?
At the Olympia Towers. It's either Olympic or the Olympia Towers in downtown New York for half price, $17 million.
He bought it for $36 million and sold it for $7 million.
It's in the New York Times and it's on the Internet.
It's almost like a club, a sick club, huh, Bruce?
Well, I know that De Mornshield was taking Oswald to parties in February of 63, and yet he was writing President Kennedy to write the foreword of his 3,000-mile donkey trip through Central America.
Now, the Oswald that he knew was the Oswald that we saw get arrested and subsequently shot by Jack Ruby, right?
Right.
Okay, so because I've always heard that there might be several Oswalds out there.
Yeah, there's a new book that that's come out that draws that theory. I haven't, dove into that. I just stick with De Morenschild.
Now, with De Morenschild, did he ever admit to anything?
He told William Altman's that Oswald...
And who's William? William who?
Altman's a Dutch journalist.
All right.
That Oswald was set up for the assassination. And then he was corresponding with his friend, CIA Director George Herbert Walker Bush. And I sued the CIA on the actual letters. Where are they? And they were purged. They were destroyed. But in this CIA document, De Morenschild is being harassed and threatened, saying that if he doesn't kill himself, that they're going to get him.
Well, why would De Morenschild, after all these years, talk to a Dutch reporter and tell him that Oswald basically was the patsy?
Well, I believe his conscience was catching up to him. I really think that he felt bad about it.
How old was he when he apparently did himself?
And he was approved for a $300,000 line of credit when he had very poor credit by Brown Brothers and Harriman.
For what? What was he going to do with the money?
Well, this is before the assassination. They gave him a $300,000 line of credit, and it was he went right across the street from where Prescott Bush was at Brown Brothers and Harriman. He retired as senator on the day De Morenschild's April 11th. Prescott Bush retires from Brown Brothers and Harriman.
And they're the ones who gave
De Morenschild a $300,000 line of credit. And De Morenschild had an office in the CIA Trust Republic National Bank building in Dallas.
What do you think he did with the money?
I think he ran out by 1977. But $300,000 was a lot of money back in 1963.
Oh, yeah. So you think he used the money for the assassination?
No, I think he lived well with it.
Okay, so he just pocketed
and then
the money.
Then he sees that he doesn't have anything, but he knows that he's got something worth money. He's trying to sell his new book.
Was it hush money?
I believe so. He had a book called I'm a Patsy, I'm a Patsy, and he was pushing this book, thinking he could make lots of money. He was meeting with Henry Luce's top people at Time Life. Rapoli.
What character, if any, was De Morenschild in the JFK Oliver Stone movie?
He was played by William Altman. Oliver Stone and William Altman, William Altman's died a couple months ago, were friends, and they both went to Yale University.
I'm trying to remember the character, though.
He's a white-haired guy.
De Morenschild was?
Yeah, they gave him. He wasn't in the big screen version. He was in the one you take.
Oh, he was. Okay, all right. That's probably why I didn't.